Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and today I'm interviewing Paul Cox, who is with Veterans for Peace. And you're saying you've been active since 1985. This is a national organization. You were in the Vietnam War. And what service were you in?
I was in the Marine Corps. I went in 1968, and I was in the Marine Corps for 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And so I guess then you saw how nasty war is. Or you tell me the story of how you got involved in Veterans for Peace and about the history of Veterans for Peace, if you would.
Okay. I got my draft notice in 1968, and I thought that since I was going off to war, I should be with the best, so I went down and joined the Marine Corps for 4 years. Not necessarily a proper choice for what was the best, but I wasn't against the war. I was really just a young kid looking for adventure at that point and was perfectly happy to go off to Vietnam War. Hadn't thought about it much. But by the time I returned from Vietnam, I was really outraged at what I had been subjected to, and was mad at myself for being such a naive chump as to go into that situation, and angry at the Marine Corps and the government and the American people and so forth. Got active in the anti-war movement while I was still an active duty GI after I returned from Vietnam, and have been active off and on since then. With Reagan's attacks on the Central American countries in the mid-80s, a number of us veterans in San Francisco got together and formed first a group called Veterans for Draft Resistance. Later that segued into a group called Veterans Speakers Alliance, and ultimately Veterans Speakers Alliance joined the national organization Veterans for Peace in about 1985, which formed in 85. We joined in about 93 and sort of became a chapter of one of the 70-some chapters of the...
Yeah, it's just really important work because it's people who have actually have a background like you. And maybe people listen to you more than they listen to somebody like me, for instance.
I've heard it said that even though we have screwed up everything we ever touched, what do we get for it? Credibility. And I think that works, and I'm perfectly willing to use that. We talk to people and try to educate the American public about the true cost of war. We try to act in whatever fashion we have the power to restrain our government from intervening in internal affairs of other nations, and ultimately want to abolish war as an instrument of foreign policy. It's really, war is really the problem, not the solution.
Right. And you also, of course, understand that it's mostly innocent people that get killed. I mean, and we're experiencing that in spades today. What is it, the bombing? It's March 21st, 2003, and they've just upped the bombing on Iraq today.
Right. And, you know, historically, 95% of the casualties in war are civilians.
You know, women and children.
Women and children, right. And that was my experience in Vietnam, too. There were, you know, the things that we did in Vietnam, just destroyed the lives of so many, many innocent people. And really not an acceptable thing, especially when our stated goal was to protect these people from the evils of communism. Here we're protecting the Iraqis from the evils of Saddam Hussein, yet we're going to kill a whole bunch of them to do that. And that's really wrong. That's not the way to do this.
It's really amazing how many people sort of don't get that. Of course, it's hard to tell how many people are really not opposed to war. Most people don't really love war. Most people don't. They have to be talked into it, and so we don't know about these polls in the United States and stuff. But I don't know. You live here in Berkeley, as I do. We say the Berkeley bubble. But I don't know. Do you have contact and with other people? Well, you must through Veterans for Peace. And what kind of feedback are you getting about how most people in the United States are feeling?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, I think that many people have an unfortunate proclivity to believing pretty much what the president tells them, and have a hard time deciding or believing that the president might lie to them. So when they've been telling them that Saddam Hussein is the problem, and Saddam Hussein is a terrorist, when there's no link between him and 9/11 or no link between him and Al-Qaeda, people have a hard time believing that that's a lie. And unfortunately, we have this chicken hawk of a president that has been able so far to snooker the American people pretty well. Having said that, I still think that, I mean, my understanding is that the polls are about 60% of the people in this country support the war, and that's opposed to the polls saying that 90% of the people supported the first Gulf War. So that's different. That's different. We'll see how that plays out in the next few weeks and coming months. But I think that the support for this war may be a mile wide, but it's only an inch thick. And I think if it comes to body bags coming home in large quantities, it's going to cause a number of people to question what's going on. Hopefully people will pay more and more attention to world opinion, which is really opposed to this, almost unanimously throughout the world. People don't want us to do this. And it's increasingly clear that that this administration's function, this is just the opening shot. I mean, they're going to go after Korea next or Iran next and Korea then. But we really intend to take advantage of our military and economic superiority and create the American Fourth Reich, you know. Mm-hmm. And how that's going to play here in this country, I think it's going to really, civil liberties in this country are in great danger.
Well, you just said the word, the Fourth Reich. I've been seeing this coming for a while, and people have just said, I mean, I said it just like Nazi Germany, you know, in the 30s, and people mostly don't like to hear that. But you're the one who said it, so if you would say more.
Well, you know, it's not going to be a repeat of what the Germans did. It's going to have, the mess that we make is going to have its own face, but these usurpers that have our control of our government right now are some evil people, and the Democrats are so lame that they can't raise their head up without getting shot at. You know, I think that politically this country is in real trouble. We're going to get ourselves way out on a limb, generate huge animosity. You already have generated huge animosity throughout the world for our policies and the way we are, and we're going to be paying for it forever. Mm-hmm. And we may be able to put together, we meaning the U.S. administration, may be able to put together an empire that they want, but, you know, at what expense and why?
And, of course, one of the things that is the case is that who fights these battles are people who are poor and of color very often, not only, but overwhelmingly.
Right. Well, while the economy in this country is going into the toilet very, very rapidly, the administration is still intent on giving a $1.5 trillion tax cut to the people who are already well off, while they're sending all these poor kids, the result of the economic draft, over to fight our wars. Our Praetorian Guard are going to fight these wars. And at the same time, they've just vastly cut the budget for the Veterans Administration. You know, the Veterans Administration is part of the trade-off. You go fight the war, and when you come back all screwed up, we'll take care of you. They're not going to do that. And historically, and now, one of the big expenses in the Veterans Administration these days is all the World War II vets are getting very old and very sick, and they're dying at a very rapid rate. But before they die, they require fairly high level of medical help, and they're not getting that from the VA now. The Vietnam vets are not getting the help that they need as they age. The Persian Gulf vets, out of the 600,000 troops that went to the Persian Gulf, 200,000 of them, somewhere between 150 and 200,000 of them, have filed for medical claims having to do with the environmental insults that they suffered while they were in the Persian Gulf, resulting from a variety of things, anthrax vaccinations, other vaccinations they got, other drugs that they were given that are, we don't even know about, depleted uranium exposure, insecticide exposure, possible exposure to chemical and biological weaponry in some cases, just a whole host of things that make up the Gulf War syndrome, and the VA and the Department of Defense are ignoring them. These guys are going into what may be equally severe exposures, and they're going to come back, and they're not going to be taken care of. You know, the deal that these soldiers make is that they'll be taken care of when they come back screwed up. I mean, as Abraham Lincoln said, to take care of those who bore the battle and their orphans and widows. This government doesn't care about them. You know, doesn't even care about its own troops. You know, and our Secretary of State, Colin Powell, is a fine example of that, because he's never said one word about the problems that the Gulf War vets suffered when he was the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
So. Do you think most people know about this, of the Gulf War syndrome? Do you think most people know about that?
I don't know about most people. I think it's a widely known problem, probably widely misunderstood, too. But the fact that fourth to a third of the troops that were in the Gulf War, now in mid-30s, most of them, are suffering huge health problems that are creating a great deal of problems for their lives. And they're not getting help for that. The Department of Defense and the VA are not even studying the problems that they have. It's too bad, because another generation is now going into that situation, and they've cut a deal, and they're doing it out of patriotism or a sense of adventure or whatever, but they're going to ruin their lives in addition to all the people's lives they're going to be killing in Iraq. And I don't want to ignore the suffering that's going to be inflicted on the poor people of Iraq and other countries, but the troops that are actually doing it, they're going to be victims too.
Well, the reason I was asking about that is because I think so often people don't have information, and I think that Gulf War syndrome, some of that stuff was contagious too. I remember hearing people talking about their families getting sick, their children and their wives, and of course in Iraq, I just did an interview with some people from Iraq, and all kinds of deformed babies, and this stuff doesn't go away, this depleted uranium or a lot of the different things. And that gets so quickly turned around. You were talking about Bush being, convincing people that this is okay. And, of course, that's with the help of the media, and so much information isn't in the media. The minute the actual so-called war, attack, I would call it, a slaughter, starts, then it's even more emphasis on patriotism and supporting our troops. Of course, it seems to me that supporting our troops would be not to send them for the very reasons that you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, now that the bombing started, George Bush is, in some people's minds, has metamorphosed from a C student bully into our commander in chief, and we have to support him. I'll be damned, I don't care what George Bush was last week. He's still the same thing this week, even though he is now. I mean, in many ways, he's much worse, because now he's carrying out his threats, except he's not carrying them out. They're being borne by the victims in Iraq and by the American troops that are going to be inflicting those damages. You know, I support the troops. I do support the troops. I support they should come home.
Yeah, me too.
And I really bristle when we get these, half a dozen counter demonstrators opposed to the 10,000 people on the street. And they're saying, well, we're not like those peaceniks over there. We support the troops. Well, we all support the troops, as long as they're protecting our country. But they're not protecting our country in Iraq. They're going after the oil for George Bush and his buddies.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul Cox, let's talk a little bit more about Veterans for Peace. Are you folks working in the high schools? Or what's happening with conscientious objection? I mean, I'm sure it's like every other organization. People have their day jobs. You just took off your lunch hour to come do this interview with me. People don't have endless time to do all the things that need to be done, I'm sure. But what is going on with Veterans for Peace right now?
Well, just speaking in general, Veterans for Peace has a long history of working for peace and justice and to try to educate the people about the true costs of war. And one of the things this country and no country ever wants to do is really pay the true costs of war. The things that we talked about, the Veterans Administration, is one of those things. I mean, you got a bunch of people coming back from a war and they're messed up. That's a cost of war that we should bear, you know, as a society. But there also have been made tremendous efforts in support of the School of the Americas Watch to try to close down the School of the Americas. Many Veterans for Peace people have done jail time for crossing the trespassing and Fort Benning in an effort to close down the School of the Americas.
And the School of the Americas is a place where people from Latin America are trained to, you say a little bit more about it, sure. To torture people, I know that.
Right. It's been since, it used to be in Panama, but they've since moved it to Fort Benning, Georgia. And it's been for many decades now the place where the U.S. trains military officers and commandos in Latin American countries, Central American, South American countries, to become our Quislings. And a great high percentage of the human rights violations inflicted on the people in Central and South America by their military people have been guided and controlled by officers that were trained in the School of the Americas. They've changed the name to something about the School of Democracy or something, but it's really a school for dictators and dictators' military people. And it's got a long history of that, and we really feel it's important to shut that down. And Father Roy Bourgeois, who is the Catholic priest that is leading that struggle, is a Vietnam veteran and a member of Veterans for Peace. And one of our members here in San Francisco, Charles Litke, is a Medal of Honor winner from the Vietnam War, just got out of, last year got out of, he spent a year in prison for his protests at the School of the Americas.
And Father Bill O'Donnell, I just want to say, who's in the next block, his church is in the next block, here in Berkeley, he just got out of prison 6 months in prison for resisting or protesting the School of Americas.
Right, and these are extraordinary heroes and role models, I think, for all of us, these guys that really put their lives on the line.
Is Charlie Litke?
Charlie Litke is in Iraq. I actually haven't heard in a few days since the bombing started any reports about him. I actually should look into that and call and see about how he's doing. But presumably he's fine so far. But it's not but as we tape this, the real dying hasn't done yet. So hopefully he'll be all right. He's Charlie Litke went to Iraq. He's putting himself there, and he spends his days at the Mother Teresa orphanage outside of Baghdad. And he's just going to be there and hold the children as the bombs fall. Yeah, and he may or may not survive this, but he's an extraordinary strong man to do what he's doing. And George Bush ought to be ashamed of himself for even thinking that he is able to do this kind of stuff without serious moral repercussions. I mean, George Bush will, I guarantee you, George Bush will burn in hell, for this. I guarantee it.
Well, in the karma of the American people, it's really intense this morning. I mean, here I am in the comfort of my nice house, and I just started kind of shaking. My heart was beating really fast, and I thought, oh, I guess I'm supposed to work on transforming this energy. And I can't even imagine how people feel where, the bombs are dropping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
So it's hard to know what to do. And it seems like educating these young people who are already there or will be going and can be signing up, whatever, is a really important thing to do about the things that you're talking about and their parents.
Right. And this war is really has to come to an end. And unfortunately, we weren't able to stop it. I don't know what we can do to stop it. But the political price that the administration and those people that support this war have to pay has to be really high. Mm-hmm. As we speak, people are you know, there's large crowds in San Francisco and presumably in other cities in this country that are blockading the roads. In some ways that's a measure of just frustration and impotence, but in other ways it's the beginning of what we're going to have to keep doing for a long time in order to turn this situation around. Tomorrow, Saturday the 22nd, at Veterans for Peace, we're holding, along with a coalition of other veterans groups, including the VFW Post and American Legion Post here in San Francisco, are going to be holding a demonstration in San Francisco at noon. It won't be large. I mean, there may be a couple hundred of us, and we're not going to blockade the streets, but we are going to try to say what's on our minds. And afterwards, I expect that we'll go join the larger demonstration that's being put on at Civic Center.
You know, this issue of being in the streets is a complicated one. I went to San Francisco yesterday to be in the streets, too, and, of course, it annoys a lot of people who don't understand what it's about or think they're against war. Someone just said to me, well, I'm not for war, but, you know, it's like it's the wrong enemy to be messing up people who are trying to get to work or something, and they don't understand. But when you say frustration, I mean, what can we do? Congress doesn't listen. The president, I mean, they don't seem to care. I mean, what is it that we can do in terms of tactics and in terms of tactics?
I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to be much help here. I agree that a lot of people perceive this as an attack on them and, hey, I'm just trying to get to work. On the other hand, people who are putting their lives out or at least putting their comfort out to be in the streets and say that this has got to stop. I don't think it's quite right to say they don't listen. I think that they do listen at the level that we're operating where we're not going to get what we want. But certainly, it's going to take a lot more of us for a lot longer time to shut this thing down so it can't happen. But even if we shut down practically every city in the country right today, it's not going to stop the war machine. That train has already left the station, and Iraq will likely fall, and there will be a lot of dead people as a result.
What about within the military itself? You said that, Paul Cox, you said that you were active while you were against the war in Vietnam while you were still in the military, and I know that was true for a lot of people. That and the issue of conscientious objection, I would like you to respond to in the next few minutes we have left.
Well, the situation is different right now, and I'm not aware of any strong GI movement as there was during towards the end of the Vietnam War. From 1970 on, the GI movement was quite impressive, actually, and through the earliest manifestations starting in like 1968-69. You know, during the Vietnam War, there were over 200 anti-war GI newspapers, underground newspapers published by active duty GIs. I mean, in 200, some of them was a two-page mimeograph sheet that came out once, and others were active for 10 years, but there were over 200 different ones. And there were coffee houses throughout the world at the military towns outside GI, off GI bases that were active. Jane Fonda and Donald Sutherland put together a show called the FTA Show that traveled around the world, went to Germany, went to Asia, went to the Philippines, and the United States. And FTA means fun, travel, and venture, or something about the Army. That was quite an impressive piece of anti-war work that they did, she's still paying the price for that and other things that she did, which is unfortunate, although nobody ever complains about to Donald Sutherland about his activities. I think it was very heroic things that Jane Fonda did at those times, but she's bunkered down now because she's taken such serious criticism for being an anti-war activist as a star. There's nothing I'm aware of that's organized and similar yet. It took a number of years for that to develop. Vietnam Veterans Against the War in 1969, and at one point had, on paper anyway, had 20,000 members. That's Vietnam veterans that were against the war. If this war drags on for 5 years, we'll see at least the same thing, maybe much greater effects, and that would be great. I mean, if the war lasts for 5 years, that's not good, but that you will see strong anti-war activism within the military, I think, is likely. What is going on is that Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors has a GI hotline. It's an 800 number that people can call, and I'm sorry, I don't know the number, that military people can call if they need help with legal issues within the military. And that could be conscientious objection. It could be AWOL. It could be, you know, any number of other problems that people are having. They get a lot of calls, and they're doubling the number of calls. I think they had 30,000 calls last year. Forgive me if that number is not quite accurate, but it's a large number. And they're fielding those calls with people who are trained in the Uniform Code of Military Justice and can give these people good, straightforward advice about what their options are with respect to the problems they're having with the military. I'm not aware of a large number of conscientious objectors within the military yet, but there have been a couple. There have been a few people, a Marine by the name of Torres, a few months ago, said, "I'm not going to do this." And they threatened him with all sorts of problems in 10 years and Leavenworth and such, and eventually they decided, let's just get rid of him, and they discharged him. So, you know, those sorts of things are happening, but they're not happening any great length yet. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and we're about out of time, but the consequences given the loss of civil rights and already you don't have a lot of the same rights in the military, but the consequences can be even a lot greater now than they were in the past. So when you said earlier, Paul Cox, about these people who stand up, you know, yourself included, I'm including you, are heroes, and because it takes a lot of strength to do that, and they are our heroes to me too, that's for sure.
Well, speaking of myself, I don't know about hero stuff. I was pretty much driven to it by the anger that I had when I came back from Vietnam. I just couldn't. I would have destroyed myself if I hadn't stood up and said something. Mm-hmm. But these other people, and if people want to get a hold of the GI hotline, they should really. I'm sorry, I don't know the number, but if you call for the 800 information for Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors, they can help you with that.
And also the Internet.
And
you can do a search.
Right, CCCO on the Internet or Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors on the Internet. As for Veterans for Peace, they have an Internet site, veteransforpeace.org, one word. And my organization locally, we have an Internet site that's not great shakes, but you can get a hold of us through VFP, that's an email, vfp@igc.org, or vssf.org.
Do you have a phone number for those who don't have the Internet?
Locally, the number is 415-255-7331. That's 415-255-7331. The number in St. Louis, Missouri for Veterans for Peace National Office is 314-725-6005.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Paul Cox from Veterans for Peace. Thanks so much for this interview, and my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, SUESUPRIANO.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979. Thanks.